boys, stay locked. Good boys, don't stroke. You don't need that dick anymore, do you?
Lock your dick away.
And you're listening to Chastity Pod.
All right. Welcome back to Chastity Pod. I'm your host, Locked Fist Monster.
And I'm Denied Dumpling. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. We are starting off season three, starting off strong. What are we doing for season three?
Oh my God. A better question is, what aren't we doing? I think season one, we really, you know, covered the basics. Season two, we got to talk to some really cool people about how they, you know, incorporate chastity in their lives. But this season, I think the main focus for us is finding some extremely interesting people and taking some deep dives into what they like.
Absolutely. Deep dives is the theme of this season. We're going to take topics, we're going to meet with experts about them, or sometimes it'll just be you and me, and we're going to beat those topics brutally to death.
I mean, I can very easily get obsessed about many of these topics we're talking about.
The hardest part will be actually just be keeping it short enough so that our listeners don't tune out, like, because, by hour three of us discussing anything, I think even the most passionate will be like, you guys could cut it short.
Look, this is joking. We don't have 3 hours of content for any one topic.
Oh, I do. All right. So today's deep dive topic is going to be the history of chastity play. Cages are everywhere now. Everybody and his brother is locked up. How did we get to this point?
But before that, we would love to thank our listeners who made this whole season possible by contributing to our Kickstarter and, you know, our upcoming sponsors, too. We want to thank them. You'll hear more from them later in the pod.
Thank you so much to everyone who has made this possible. We're recording this March 10th. We are deep into our lockup. Denied Dumpling, how's your lockup going?
Pretty well. I think that even though we officially started our lockup on the 14th, I was locked since the 13th. So that's today's March 10th. That's only been about three, four weeks for me. I'm sitting pretty comfortable. Funny enough, I had a wet dream just yesterday after a nap, which is really rare for me. I usually get them in my second or third month of being horny and locked up. This is really early for me.
Would this perhaps be an extra horny lockup for you?
I don't know. Maybe it's something in the air. Maybe it's something about my excitement for this year. Maybe it's the fact that I'm, you know, getting so much more into fisting and having so much more sex. It could be a multi-factor reason. But how's your lockup going?
Definitely could be any of those. So like you, I started the lockup a little bit early. I started on January 29th because I was testing out my new BA 28 to make sure that I could wear it indefinitely. And then when the lockup started, I was just still locked. So we just kept it rolling. So today is day 40. Today is day 40 of my lockup. No wet dreams for me. I've still actually never had a wet dream at any point in my life. Like,
whoa.
not even like, you know, 12-year-old, 13-year-old locked fist monster had a wet dream. But it's going fantastically fucking well. I've been keeping a little calendar of like all of my crazy sexual adventures. I've been doing great in the gym. I've been, I think I got fisted by like just quickly glancing at my February calendar. I got fisted on 7 different days in February. So,
oh my God.
1 out of every 4 days, I was taking a fist at least. I rode toys about twice that often.
God bless.
It's been great. I am loving this. Definitely don't want out at this point. So, which is good because, you know, we're locked. We're locked for a while. How long are we locked until?
So it's 140 days, which means we will get out most likely. Again, our start date was the 14th of February. We'll get out the earliest right after July 4th. July 5th is our unlock date. Should we, you know, not mess up and add on more days?
Yeah. Midnight February 15th was the start. When the clock struck midnight. So yes, July 5th's the earliest we can get out. But the good news is we now have a lot of attention that we can spend on this podcast.
So quick question. I mean, you were just talking earlier in the interlude episode, you were telling everyone about how nervous you were going into this extremely long lockup. Now that we've started, how are you feeling?
Right now, I'm feeling great.
Confident?
Right now I'm feeling good. I haven't yet reached a point where I'm like, I desperately need out. Maybe I'll hit that point. Maybe this lockup I won't. Maybe this is the lockup where like it clicks for me in a way where I'm like, no, I can just stay locked forever. I don't know. But I still really crave topping cute little twinks. So like I don't think I want to stay locked forever. You know, we'll find out in a few months. But I'm pretty sure that I'll want out.
Oh, I cannot wait for it to get to summer and spring, and you just see all the adorable twinks and their little bubble butt thongs and their jocks, and you're just aching to get out of that cage. I cannot wait to deny you that pleasure.
I mean, I go to Steamworks on like Thursday nights frequently, which is boys' night, where guys 25 and under get on for free. And like, there's so many delicious twinks then. I just have them fist me, which has been going great.
Blowing some minds, losing some hands.
Like literally last Thursday, I taught three different guys how to fist me. It's great. All right. So we've got a new sound editor. He did our interlude episode. It was fantastic. Looking forward to him doing this whole season. We do have ads. You will hear an ad later on in this episode. It is for a product we deeply, deeply believe in. We thank them for their sponsorship. You might have heard we have new music, all exciting stuff. Other life updates. What else is new for you?
What else is new for me? Oh my gosh, Locked Fist, so much. I think ever since this year turned around, Sir CJ, my master, and I have really gone even deeper into like the whole Dom sub master slave submission thing. Mm-hmm. We want to find other ways outside of just, you know, in a scene during sex to really make that fantasy a reality.
Right.
Find new ways to intensify submission and dominance. And I was actually talking to one of my friends on Twitter. His at is Daddy Kink, DaddieKink. He's a friend of mine. And we've been chatting, and he gave me this awful suggestion of surveillance kink. Mm-hmm. And so the more I thought about it, you know, being always accessible 24/7 to my master really drove a lot of erotic feelings. Mm-hmm. And so I made the leap, and I got from Amazon a medium priced camera, security camera. I put it next to my bed on a high vantage point. And so currently master can watch me do whatever I'm doing all day, any day. And he can also, there's like voice mm-hmm. activation where he can bark at me. He can say, hi, boy.
So there's a little speaker?
There sure is. It's both ways.
Has he used it yet?
He sure has, yeah.
Ooh. It's been like, strip, boy.
Well, very much more like he's watching me, you know, when I'm like masturbating and stuff, I can tell him. And he can also, like, I can't really lie to him anymore about what I'm doing. If he enforces things like ass play or self-fisting or training, I have to do it because he can check up on me at any moment.
That is super fucking hot. When did you put this camera in?
Just a week and a half ago. It's very recent. I've actually, like, the mental component of being constantly surveyed has kind of settled in. And I think that I would really be excited if there were more cameras in my apartment. I think that would be really fucking hot to just have every area of my house surveyed. So I think, you know, in Dom sub play, like, there, you're always looking for new ways to up the, you know, up the stakes. So we're taking it step by step. Really excited for what's going to come for the rest of the year. What about you, Lockfist? What's up with you?
One more thing, actually. How much did that count? You said it was medium priced. How much did it cost?
Oh, it was like 60.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No. I mean, like, really, really high end surveillance cameras, I feel like, are more important when you're like outdoors and there's like rain or shine. But in a controlled environment like my room, I'm not spending $120 on a HD cam to see who's stealing my packages, you know?
And how's the video quality? Are we talking about, like, is it like grainy, or is it like actually pretty decent?
It's medium, not grainy. It's medium, and it works at night. Ooh. Which is kind of hot.
Ooh,
yeah.
This is very hot. This is very exciting.
Oh, back to what's new with you.
So new for me, I set a new bench PR last week. Bench 280 pounds.
Oh my God.
Go
That's
me.
so crazy.
I know, right? Bench 280 pounds. I failed my recent squat and deadlift PRs. I tried that. I tried it all like in the same week. That was just sort of how my cycle lined up. So I set a new deadlift PR in January of 500 pounds. I went for 505 pounds at the end of February. I got it off the ground three times. Couldn't complete the rep. Similarly, squat, my previous squat max was 170 kilos, 374 pounds.
Jesus.
I went for 380. I made two good attempts at it. I like the strength was there. I was just a bit off that day. I just couldn't complete the rep either time, had to bail both times. And then just to push myself and show that I could still do it, I then knocked out a 370. So I'm making great fucking progress in the gym. This has been, I haven't missed a day in the gym in like 3 months. I haven't missed a day in the gym since the beginning of December.
That's insane.
I'm keeping at it. Like, I hope that throughout this lockup, the himbo journey just continues and progresses. And you know what? Maybe by July, I'll break 300 on my bench press and 400 on my squat. We'll see.
I hope you do. I think that I hope that this long lockup is the life-changing journey that you needed to really break through many of your goals, including, you know, accepting a life where you possibly give up your dick forever. Who knows?
That last part, maybe. But like, I'm definitely feeling like the big himbo muscle fisting bottom, locked fisting bottom, like headspace. I'm there and it is a wonderful, I am loving it. It is a wonderful place to be in. And like, you know, it's great. Like just being at like Steamworks, for instance, and cruising around with my cage out, my muscles bulging, you know, little twinks feeling me up and slipping their hands inside me. So fucking hot.
Yeah.
So fucking hot. So the latest Twitter discourse, I don't know if you saw this.
Ooh.
But did you see the cage print that everyone's talking about on that that social media influencer, that Andrew Goes Places?
Oh, he's like a travel blogger. He does leisure stuff.
Yeah, like I'd never heard of him. Well, up until, you know, he showed up on my Twitter feed with like picture like zoomed in on like his crotch. Apparently, like, you know, he's got a few hundred thousand followers. He's like your standard sort of hunky gay lifestyle travel blogger type guy. But in his like most recent video on Instagram, with, you know, him just wandering around in a red Speedo, like playing with a coconut and like being in some tropical paradise, people are like, wait a second, that's a cage print. He's locked.
Oh, it looks like it's a kink 3D print in his Speedo.
Yeah. So first off, do you think that's definitely a cage print, or do you think that's just a bulge and just like the light catching it weird?
Oh no, it's 100% a cage print. That's, yeah, confirmed.
That's my take too. And it does look like a kink 3D cobra cage. Maybe it's a knockoff, but it looks like it's kink 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that raises the interesting question of like, How did we get to this point where chastity now is like relatively mainstream, where like guys are going out and about locked, and like if people notice they are locked, it's not sort of a big deal.
The fact that it's a huge kink that's blowing up, I don't know if Andrew's going to continue making content that's going to include a cage print. I don't know if he's, you know, exploring the kink, new to it, or if he's one of the people that are doing, you know, a follower grab, and they know that chastity is such a huge demographic, you know, in so many different kinks, and they would, you know, find a lot of interest. Because, you know, just last year, someone that I've really, you know, enjoyed for a very long time. Do you know the country singer, gay country singer, Steve Grand? He's super hunky, really huge muscles. He really got into bodybuilding in the past decade.
I've never listened to any of his songs.
Uh-huh.
I know of him now, but only because of the cage print discourse from like a year ago.
Yeah, last year he so Steve Grand had, you know, my first entrance into him was his music, gay early country, you know, when I was in college. And so after he got super hunky, Like, he's not in sex work. He doesn't make content. He does really tasteful muscle calendars. He does, you know, ever since he got into bodybuilding, he's made a whole line of underwear, Steve Grand Access underwear. And so he's been modeling in it. You know, he's doing well for himself. And then, bam, he jumps onto the Twitter with his new pictures, proudly sporting a King 3D imprint in his super tight Speedos and thongs. And we're all very much screaming on gay Twitter because he is so hot. And I genuinely believe he enjoys it.
He does seem to be genuinely into it. And the interesting thing is just sort of think about, like, how has Chastity entered the zeitgeist? Where has it culturally been the past, you know, 20, 30 years? So, like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Robin Hood Men in Tights, Mel Brooks's Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Uh-huh, classic.
Right. So that features fairly prominently the Maid Marian's locked in a chastity belt. It's a female chastity, obviously female chastity belt, but it's played for, you know, like, aha, this is funny, she's in a chastity belt type thing. But culturally existing there, people knew what it was. It was a funny thing. I think the first male reference I saw to a chastity cage that was sort of like culturally prominent was there was that episode of Californication from 2013 where I never really watched Californication, but one of the characters' wives wanted to lock a character in a CB6000. And that was less as a like kinky foreplay thing and more sort of like a stop cheating on me punishment type thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But still, right, still hot and still entering, you know, entering the discourse. Entering sort of cultural awareness. And then most recently, but still very much in the comedy flavor, you know, Big Mouth in 2022.
Yes.
Had that episode where Andrew stole Dr. Birch's peenie prison, which is obviously just a rip off of the, you know, the cellmate Bluetooth cage. Mm-hmm. Never buy the cellmate Bluetooth cage. It's a terrible cage. But stole that cage from his closet and locked it on his dick. And that was like a recurring like little joke throughout the episode where he had locked his dick into this thing and he couldn't get it out.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, I definitely agree with you. Most of the references prior to, I would even say this decade, the 2020s, you know, it's always just been a joke, right? Like, ha, 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 you're in a cage. Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
And like, I actually think there's like a bunch of like, I don't remember if it's Japanese or Chinese media. It probably isn't Chinese media because Chinese people can be so conservative. But like women in chastity belts being part of like the running joke of like, haha, you can't really get any of this pussy. And that's still in comedy.
Well, I mean, chastity as sort of a, like, first off, just because you're conservative doesn't mean you're not kinky. And in fact, a lot of the most conservative people have like a lot of the just deepest fucking kinks.
Oh yeah, the sex work to Republican senator pipeline is still strong.
Right, Larry Craig getting arrested for trying to cruise in a bathroom, in an airport bathroom. I mean, who hasn't cruised in an airport bathroom? But
Deny Dumpling raises their hand.
Well, you've missed out. But you know, I've cruised in an airport bathroom, but I've also never voted against gay marriage. right. And there is what was that senator from Louisiana who's really into like diaper play and was seeing the DC madam. David Vitter. That's it. Vitter the shitter.
What an awful nickname. Poor thing.
I know. Well, no, poor thing. He was a conservative senator, Republican senator from Louisiana.
Oh, so we don't like him. Oh, we don't like him.
He deserved, but like also, you know, super, super fucking kinky. So just because the culture is conservative doesn't mean that it's also kinky. It just means they're ashamed of the kink, which if they're into a humiliation fetish, which some of these people seem to be, like Ted Cruz clearly loves being humiliated.
That's unfortunate if he doesn't. And we're just assuming he does.
Ted Cruz, there's no one who could live his life like Ted Cruz without killing himself if he was just deeply into being humiliated. That's the only possible explanation.
You know what? If that's the case, we need to stop shaming him and we need to just gray rock his ass.
We just need to forget about him, right?
Yeah.
All right. But that then feeds into the deep dive of today's episode, which is, What is the history of chastity devices for sex and kink play? And how did we get to this point?
What's the origin story?
And we're going to explore that in detail right after this word from our sponsor. Deny Dumpling, you're a permalock sub. What cage are you locked in right now?
I'm wearing the pink Kink 3D Cobra N with a size 1 curved ring. It's incredibly comfortable and currently my favorite cage. How about you, Lockfist?
I have the black Kink 3D Cobra S extra wide because I'm extra thick with a size 2 and size 3 curved rings. It's also my favorite non-metal cage.
Getting the fit right can be pretty annoying for chastity play. So part of what makes Kink 3D so great is their interchangeable parts. Any size cage fits on any base ring, so you can make adjustments as your chastity journey evolves.
That's right. Also, they provide live fittings at stores like Mr. S Leather in San Francisco,
Leatherman in New York City,
and at various kink events all around the world, like Claw in Cleveland,
International Mr. Leather in Chicago,
Kink Down South in Atlanta,
Dory Alley and Folsom Street Fair, and so much more.
So if you're curious about chastity and are going to be in one of those cities or at one of those events, you can get fitted for a cage.
And you can listen to our season 1 episode, The Right Cage Is Out There, on how to measure yourself for a cage before getting your own.
These cages are extremely well made, they're comfortable, durable, and easy to clean. Definitely my first choice for anyone getting into chastity.
You can buy these cages on kink3d.com.
There's also a subreddit, our Kink3D Exchange, where people sell or exchange their gently used cages and rings.
So what are you waiting for? Get locked today with Kink3D.
And we're back. So this is a brief history of chastity devices for sexual purposes. First off, before diving in, I'd like to thank all of the people who helped make this possible, especially the fine people at the Leather Archives and Museum in Chicago, specifically Gary, the executive director of the museum, and Mel, the chief archivist librarian person. They were instrumental in me getting a lot of the resources for this. I'd also like to thank all of the people who over the years I've talked about this online with, gathering just ideas and sources on it, including Kink3D and a dear friend of the show, Denying Thumper. And, everyone else who has messaged me or chatted with me about this. Even if I don't mention what it is that we chatted about, it helped form the thoughts of this, of the rest of this. All right, so starting off, for a lot of people, you and me included, the act of being denied access to their genitals is just extremely arousing.
Mm-hmm.
And in modern day, there's all of these devices now to assist in this kink. There's all of these cages and belts and what have you that you can buy and you can play with. And broadly speaking, we're going to divide these devices into three types. A belt chastity device, which is like a belt around the waist and then something through the crotch. It can be worn with either male or female genitalia. It's sometimes called a shield. It's attached to the front, usually going between the legs around to the back. That's the sort of classic belt style chastity device. There's the ball trap device, which is the most common among men, the one that you sort of all know and love, which is two crucial pieces, a ring that goes around the base of the cock and balls, and a cage that covers the penis and locks the ring. And that's like the standard Kink 3D device that you've seen.
Yeah.
Or the CB6000 from, you know, two decades ago. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when you just search on Amazon for a chastity device, like tens of thousands of other options.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you're locked in right now.
Correct.
That's technically what I'm locked in as well. But the third category is a pierce device, a device that uses some sort of piercing on male genitalia. Usually it's a Prince Albert, or a frenulum, or an ampulong, or an apotravaya piercing. Those are all just piercings that go through the penis in different ways. And on female genitalia, usually it's a clitoral or clitoral hood or labial piercing. And there's some overlap between these categories, right? Because you can have a device, like the device I'm wearing right now, is a combination ball trap device and it's a pierce device. It has an integrated PA stem, but it's also a base ring locked to a cage.
Yep.
Yep. But also there's plenty of ways that this can stand alone. Good friend of mine just sent me a picture earlier today of a chastity piercing, which was just literally one big ring that enters into the scrotum, goes through the penis, and then comes out around and connects back to, like, it's just a big metal ring that the penis is impaled on, essentially. And that's a chastity device.
That's insane.
It's insane. It's insane looking. It's the, like, there's a reason it's not common.
Yeah. I mean, it also, you can't wear that every 24/7, I'm assuming.
Maybe you could. I don't know. I don't know. But
if you're in that device, do call in.
Yeah. So there's overlaps, there's intersections between these, but there's the big question. How did these devices originate? Where do they come from? How do we get to this point? So before we even jump into chastity cages, just sort of a very quick, brief history of how did kink enter its way into the mainstream? Yeah. Late 1700s, you've got the Marquis de Sade cranking out books that had him in prison for being insane, like the 120 Days of Sodom and Justine, which are these very sexually perverse, sadistic stories. Mm-hmm. No chastity devices in the in these stories. At least I don't think I've read any. There is like body mutilation stuff, mm-hmm. but like no one's locked in a chastity cage in those. And then on the flip side of this, there is in 1870, Leopold von Sacher-Masoch publishes Venus and Furs, which is this erotic story where he's fantasizing about being dominated by this cruel mistress. And she treats him as a servant and she whips him with a crop and he's desperately in love with her.
Ooh.
As a piece of erotic fiction, honestly, it's not great.
Oh.
Like, you read this and go, one, what a really whiny protagonist. Two, like, he really doesn't realize how good he's got it with this mistress who's so accommodating of his kinks. And yet he still kind of treats her like shit. As a first go at this, it's historically interesting. From those, in the 1890s and early 1900s, you have psychiatrists and early sexologists coining terms like sadism, referring to the works of Marquis de Sade, taking pleasure in causing pain, and masochism from Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, referring to enjoying being on the pain side of things. And that's how we get, that's how sadomasochism enters into the modern cultural dialogue.
Whoa.
That's sort of the origins of the SM in BDSM as we know it today, right?
Fascinating.
So that brings us to early 1900s. Our very first stop is a book called The Girdle of Chastity by Dr. Eric John Dingwall, and it's published in 1931. And this book discusses only belt devices, and also only belt devices for female genitalia. It does not even assume that any other sort of devices exist. It doesn't talk about piercings. It doesn't talk about male chastity. It talks about the myth that chastity belts were used by crusaders to keep their wives chaste while they went off to war in the 12th century. This is entirely fictional. There's no evidence that it would happen. And like, also wearing a medieval made chastity belt for years on end in the 11th century is like not hygienic or
plausible.
Yeah, not at all. Right. And like, it also talks about how, you know, based upon these myths, you know, they made during the Renaissance, they made some of these chastity devices. It's sort of unclear if these were ever worn, but it's clear that, you know, at the very least, people have been fantasizing about this in some way.
Mm-hmm. The purity, the concept.
Right. For at mm-hmm. least like the past 1,000 years.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. So then that brings us into the middle of the 20th century and the sexual revolution.
So in the late 1960s, I think, is when we first start seeing. Also, as we progress into this really cool progression of each of the 10s, we'll also be including in Chastity Pod Twitter pictures from the leather archives that Locked Fist took. And they'll give some more color to the discussion that we're about to have. So please join us on our Twitter. Check out that thread post and take a look for yourselves what kind of devices we're referring to.
So, yeah, I spent an afternoon in the leather archives in Chicago digging through old bondage catalogs and magazines, finding as many examples of chastity devices as I could, taking photos of them. And then this is, this will be, I took, 120 or so photos, 113 or something photos. This is, we're going to just post like five or six of them to Twitter, but you're going to, it'll give a sense of the history of the progression. So the first example I could find in the leather archives, I think, was a Centurion's bondage catalog, which Centurion's was a publication that existed from the late 1960s into the early 1980s. And like every year they'd come out with a new catalog featuring all sorts of just bondage gear you could buy. And I think the first chastity device I found was a female chastity belt for sale in the late 1960s in a Centurion's magazine. Then in the 1970s, we start seeing across a lot of different catalogs, some chastity devices. And Denied Dumpling, I've shown you some of these pictures.
Yeah. So I'm seeing a really extensive selection of belts for women. Mm-hmm. I'm also seeing some belts for men. Mm-hmm. So they're just thick leather belts that go around the waist, holding on by buckle. And it seems like there's like a shield piece in the front for the women. And then for the men, there's of course an insert for them to pull their erect penis through. And I'm noticing themes of, you know, it all being thick leather. I'm seeing a lot of metal buckles. And it's like a thick shield sheath that goes over the erect penis, kind of like a protective cup for sports, mm-hmm. that prevents people from really touching their dick.
Yeah. And like some of these, like I'm looking at the PPS9 Deluxe Pant Sheath right now, which is like, it looks like literally boxer briefs, leather boxer briefs,
yeah.
that have like a locking belt around each of the thighs, a locking belt around the waist, and then this anatomically correct leather sheath over the penis that like both has laces and then three buckles and then like a ring attached to the end of it, attached to another strap that goes behind the waist. Like it is an incredibly elaborate and unnecessarily convoluted device that you could clearly not wear for any length of time.
Yeah, you can't pee in this.
Yeah, no, it's you can't pee in it, you can't shit in it, you can't. That leather is going to get gross if you sweat in it for any length of time.
I can't. What? Yeah, I also don't know. Can you sit in it? It doesn't look that comfortable.
It doesn't look like you can even sit down, right? You know, it's just like this is clearly like a one. This is clearly for a bondage scene for like an hour or two at most. But it could be yours in, you know, what, 1979 or something for $200 if you wanted.
$200.
Well, Jesus. Technically, $189.95 or $199.95 with butt plug, not including shipping.
So I'm also noticing
in 1970s dollars. So, you know, like $700-ish today, $800-ish today.
Oh my God. Something else I'm noticing are these kind of like leather penis condom things. They're like sheaths that you pull over an erect penis and sometimes balls. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're holding on to like the head or the shaft with all of these buckles. There's like an insane amount of buckles. I'm seeing like four or five on one device. And then some of them have shoelaces to tie them up and tighten them too. None of this seems plausible for like a penis. It looks like by the time you get it on, you'll be soft.
Yeah, like none of this is in any way practical. These are expensive convoluted devices. But the other thing that we start seeing in the 1970s, and the first one that I see is in 1974 the August September 1974 Chronicles of Leather Mania, which is the Gates of Hell device. And this device is the clear forerunner of what we now think of as sort of the ball trap device. All it is it's just like a series of cock rings attached by a leather strap. There's a cock ring that you stuff your cock and balls through, and then it's connected by a strap to a number of other slowly getting smaller cock rings that you feed your penis through. It doesn't prevent you from getting erect. not locked on at all. You can easily just slip your way out of it. Doesn't even like prevent full stimulation, right? You can still like rub your dick around the sides of it.
No, it's more like cock jewelry.
It's more cock jewelry. It's more like a teasing thing. It's more like just a very complicated cock ring. But it is very clearly, this is very clearly like the origins of what is now what we would call a ball trap device.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this leads in the 1980s, where you have the first sort of locking ball trap device, the Stallion Guard, which appears in 1984 in Mr. S. Leather's magazine. And this is the same idea as the Gates of Hell, the series of cock rings. But now you've got a leather cuff that locks around the base of your cock and balls, and another leather cuff that locks around your scrotum. And then you've got two padlocks to lock the series of rings to those two cuffs. Again, we'll post a picture of this on Twitter, but this is the first device that actually looks like a ball trap device. And it's, again, something very impractical. You're not going to be able to wear this for any length of time, especially with like that much leather that close to your flow of urine.
Yeah. Also, I'm just looking over the 1980s pictures. It looks like there's a departure from just plain leather belts. I'm actually noticing a lot more metal. I'm seeing the inclusion of a lot more padlocks. Mm-hmm. Like now, instead of just like buckles and stuff, there's actually padlocks locking the shield piece in on actual belts closed.
Yep.
There's also medical. There's also metal sheaths for the penises too. And I'm glad that they left the penis sheaths of the 70s to rot, because I'm not seeing those anymore here. There's no more of these stupid leather condoms.
Exactly. You know, we're starting to, by the 1980s, we've realized that leather and urine don't mix well.
Yeah.
To the shock of no one.
There's also like an actual interest in orgasm denial. It's starting to be like, I mean, before I'm sure it was hot for a scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm starting to see like the intentionality with Mr. S start to take hold, and that carries over into the 90s.
Yeah, and just one last thing on the 80s. This is when I start finding the oldest stories that I can find that actually talk about chastity plane orgasm denial in like the late 1980s, mid 1980s.
Stories where?
So for instance, on Nifty. On Nifty, they have. Yeah, so A First Time Slave Training by Terry Nelson in 1987. You can find this on Nifty. It's the story's called Slave Training. And, you know, he goes, then I felt cold leather sliding up over my balls down my cock. Straps again were fastened around me. I heard the click of a lock. There, Mike said. That's a special chastity belt for training. Nothing will happen unless you start to jack off or play with yourself. There's a double lining, and if you put any pressure around your cock, you'll find a number of sharp points will stick through, and your cock will know what real pain is.
Oh.
All right. So that's when we start seeing, you know, some... That's when now we're into orgasm denial. Now we're into chastity play. Now it's becoming commercially available. So now that's bringing us into the 1990s. And in the 1990s, Mr. S. Leather and Fetters, UK Fetters, that appears to be when they either merged or when they started really working together closely. And the result of that is throughout the 90s, Mr. S. Leather is coming out with, you know, a new supplemental catalog every year.
Yeah.
And each additional catalog has new and elaborate metal chassis devices that are all metal, that are very hardcore, that are clearly designed to be inescapable and prevent you from playing with your cock.
Oh my God, Mr. S really went to town. Some of this looks extremely experimental, as in like they're just trying new things, because I see a lot of really great design elements. Like I'm seeing a birdcage cock and ball cage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a seed pod cage where it completely covers over the penis. But there's also major issues with practicality in terms of like how heavy a lot of these things look.
Mm-hmm.
The metal looks very thick, and some of them have to be held up by thick leather straps to go around the waist. So they're like cock and ball cages, semi belt cages, a hybrid in between the two.
Yeah. And we're seeing just a lot of metal, like what looks like 5 to 10 pounds of iron. I'm looking at the Caterpillar locking cock cage right now, the Samurai cock cage. These are retailing for $395 in the mid 1990s. So these things are one, just massive and expensive and elaborate, and two, they are definitely not practical for long-term wear. You're not going to be able to wear this for more than a couple hours, more than one good scene, you know. Like especially the samurai one with the thigh spreaders. It's like this web of metal cage that covers like from midway between your belly button and your penis all the way down to like this metal grid is keeping your thighs separated. It's elaborate.
I can't imagine walking even front or back without looking like a penguin.
With that, you can't even walk. With just the standard samurai cage, you've still got just this elaborate belt that has this huge metal frame that comes over your cock and balls entirely. And while they describe it as finished for walking and long-term wear comfort, you're not going to be able to wear this for, you know, you could wear it a day. You cannot wear this for a week. You cannot wear this for a few days.
What the heck is this cock cuff that's on the corner here?
Yes, so this is one of the first ball trap devices that actually makes halfway sense. What someone did was they took like you know a handcuff, just sort of a single handcuff, and they just welded a metal tube to shove your penis into it. And so the idea is that you'd shove your penis down this metal tube, and then you'd lock this handcuff around your cock and balls.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So that's so in the mid 1990s, that's where we are. And that's when a major revolution occurs in chastity play. So this revolution is in 1995. Frank and Doris Miller invented the CB 2000. And this is the first plastic ball trap chastity cage for long-term wear.
This is revolutionary. I mean, none of the Mr. S leather catalogs seem to hold anything that's made of plastic for chastity
This
cages.
is, as far as I know, the first plastic cage. It is also the first cage that sort of mass produced with the idea of being worn for long-term wear, in theory. And the CB2000 is extremely similar to the CB6000, which is, you know, the next evolution of it, patented in 2006. In 2000, there's actually a Daily Show clip where they interview Frank and Doris Miller about the CB2000.
Daily Show with Jon
The
Stewart.
Daily Show with Jon Stewart in a clip called Nutcase in 2000. This is early Jon Stewart. This is Jon Stewart, you know, when he was in his like early 30s and like still had dark hair and
Oh
like,
my God.
yeah. This is Jon Stewart barely out of his leather jacket, wearing an ill-fitting suit for the first time. Is that era. And so this becomes sort of the dominant chassis device of the next decade, the CB2000, and then later the CB6000. And it really is what sort of triggered the move from this is a fetish piece that you can wear on occasion for a scene into this is something you could, in theory, make into sort of a lifestyle wearing it all the time. Although I would be remiss if I didn't mention that concurrently there were a few other things. So on the pierced devices front, Mistress Lori came out with her Lori tubes around this time in the late 1990s, which were these custom metal chassis devices that would slip over the penis and would be secured by a piercing through either the frenulum or the Prince Albert. And those were also designed for long-term wear. And you also had full belt designs like Tolly Boy coming out at this time and Reinhold. But those had like cost thousands of dollars and were like 6 months waiting time to get made.
Holy shit.
But that's where we are at around 2000.
So that means that, like, actually, we shit on the CB2000 a lot, but it looks like they're really the beginning of like the modular long-term wearable cage. Like they're really, a major change in, I guess, not philosophy, but I guess like design and intentionality of chastity.
They are. They absolutely are. The CB2000 and the CB6000, which came out in 2006, those definitely revolutionized how chastity cage designs work. That said, I'm not going to apologize for shitting on the CB6000.
I feel kind of bad. We've been shitting on them every season consistently. Maybe we should apologize.
At this point, no, we should not apologize. I refuse to apologize for shitting on the CB6000 cage, and I will continue to shit on the CB6000 cage.
Oh my God.
Because it's a terrible cage. This is like, it was revolutionary when it came out in 2006. But they're still making new ones and selling it, like, to this day, 18, 20 years later, right? Without any changes in design. And they're terrible cages. They're deeply flawed cages that break easily, that are uncomfortable to wear, that injure the wearer. Like, no one should ever buy a CB6000 in this day and age.
Oh.
And it's a crime against humanity that they're continuing to make them.
I think that whoever is like the next generation of Frank and Doris Miller, please, you know, take the CB6000. Really, you know, are they? I don't know. Are they up to new numbers? 8,000?
No. The CB CB6000 is where it ends. They patented the CB6000 in 2006, and then they stopped.
Oh, you know what? Their work is done.
Like they made the Vice and they made the Curve, which whereas like the Vice was this anti pullout addition to the CB6000, and the Curve was a slightly longer cage that bent down a little bit more, so you could fit bigger dicks into it. But those were the only two innovations they made after that, and they did briefly try and do a pierced device, the PA5000, which was basically just a plastic version of Lori's tube. Which I've worn one of those and it cut my dick and my dick split in half. Do not recommend. Terrible, terrible devices should never be worn or purchased by anyone. And the people making them should stop doing so.
But we appreciate you for the historical contributions.
Yes, yes, yes. We appreciate, right. It's sort of like being able to say like, George Washington, great man for, you know, leading the American Revolution and all of that. But if he was alive today with his, you know, and still tried to own slaves, we'd be like, George, you gotta stop.
George, you gotta stop, please.
Right. You know.
All right, moving on.
All right. So then that brings us to around 2010. And the early 2010s is when the Holy Trainer comes out. And this is the next big revolution in chastity cages, in the ball trap chastity cages, where they invent the concept of both the ergonomic base ring. So CB6000 has just a solid circular base ring with like hard edges and rigid corners. Holy Trainer invents two key concepts here. They invent the ergonomic base ring. Here they bent the base ring and made it smoother so that it would rest more comfortably against the backside of your scrotum. Key innovation. Other key innovation was the integrated chamber lock, the cabinet lock. They called it the magic lock at the time. So unlike a padlock, this chamber lock, you know, inserts in and then turns. And that's the lock you see on almost all cages today.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two key innovations of the Holy Trainer in the early 2010s, which just really revolutionizes chastity play. And then that brings us into the late 2010s, where April 2019, Kink 3D, who, you know,
we love,
dear friend of the show, we love them. Also our sponsors, thank you. They Kink 3D posts their prototype on Reddit in April 2019, where they've designed a cage that has a number of huge innovations. One, it has interchangeable rings and cages, so you can match any ring with any cage. They go have a wide range of sizes. So previously, you'd either get this off the shelf, one size fits none, from CB6000 or Holy Trainer, or you'd have to go custom made. Here you could get custom level fit by just buying standard off the shelf. The finish on it was incredible. There was great tolerances, so no more of the sort of pinching that would come from the cage and ring migrating separately. So that brings us to today, where Kink 3D is the sort of the dominant player in your standard ball trap design. Concurrent to all of this, of course, there's advancements being made in pierced chastity and in belt designs. So in pierced chastity, for instance, we see steelworks in Germany emerge around 2009 and or shortly before 2009. And they start making really high quality pierced ball trap devices. And Badass Workroom jumps on the scene in 2021 with what I consider to be the highest quality pierced custom-made cages today. But that's the brief history of where we are. That's how we have this current scene of chassis cages. And of course, in the interest of time, I had to skip over many device manufacturers: Bonfour, Rigid Chassis, Mature Metal, Steelworks, spelled slightly differently in Montreal. Evotion Wearables entered the scene in the mid-2010s as well. Skipping over all of them, they all contributed to this steady evolution. But the big ones that I want to just sort of jump point to point are in ball trap devices, CB6000 to Holy Trainer to Kink 3D, and in pierce devices, Lori Tube to Steelworks in Germany to Badass Workroom today.
It's really interesting how in 2010s, they moved from all of this super heavy stuff from Mr. S into these much more lightweight, long-term wear, less seen, more every day. And that has carried on into what we wear to this very day, to this very moment. Yeah. So thank you so much for this incredibly informative, extremely long-winded, but detailed walk through time of chastity devices.
My pleasure. And remember, we're putting pictures of some of these devices and sort of their history online in a tweet thread. So you can check that out at ChastityPod on Twitter and follow along.
And if you wanted to actually listen in on our favorite cage, Kink 3D, we also have our episode on season 2, episode 3, where we get to talk with KD, the maker of Kink 3D, and see, you know, talk with the mad scientist himself.
And he goes into extreme wonderful detail of his entire process for manufacturing that cage. So it's a great listen. Highly recommend.
Yeah. Highly recommend for all of you cage heads. That's our show for the day. I think that without anyone contesting currently between the two of us here, you may be the resident expert on chastity history in North America in regards to our history.
I mean, I think I might be. I don't know anyone else who's dug through as many many old bondage catalogs trying to document the history of chastity as I have. So until proven otherwise, I am the world's foremost expert
on the history of chastity cages.
It's a very low bar though. Like, yeah, you know, to a week of study, you could easily pass me.
Any of our listeners who have anything fascinating to add, we would love to hear about it. So please do call in and message us on Twitter, Bird App, before it implodes. And we would like to thank everyone for listening. Season 3 is going to have some insane twists and turns. You guys are not ready for this. And until next time,
stay locked.